Welcome to this week's edition of Far West Texas. Readings from the Big Bend Sentinel, the Monahans News, and the Fort Stockton Pioneer, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Big Bend Sentinel for Thursday, June 8th, 2023. Big Bend's Municipal Swimming Pools Open for Summer Season by Mary Cantrell, MKCANTRELL at BigBendSentinel.com, by Sam Karras, Sam at BigBendSentinel.com. Tri-County. As the weather heats up, local swimming pools are open for business. Public spaces offering locals the chance to cool down have announced their hours for the summer. The Big Bend Sentinel has compiled hours of operation, fees, and other pertinent information below. Alpine. The Alpine Municipal Pool, located at Coconut Park, will be open 7 days a week from now until August 11th. The daily schedule is 11 a.m. to 12 a.m. lap swim, 12 to 5 p.m. general admission, 5 to 6 p.m. water aerobics, and 6 to 8 p.m. private pool parties. Lap swim and water aerobics are dependent upon staffing. Private parties can be reserved through the city and cost $100 plus a $30 refundable deposit fee. Adult supervision is required for children under 13 years of age. Glass, barbecuing, open fires, and alcohol are not permitted. Daily admission fees are $2 for children and $3 for adults. Annual season passes are $55 for individuals, $35 for senior citizens over 55 years of age, $85 for families with 5 members or less, and $105 for families with more than 5 members. For more information, visit the City of Alpine website or call City Hall, 432-837-3301. Marfa. The City of Marfa Municipal Pool, located in the Marfa Activities Center at Cofield Park, will be open Monday through Saturday. A closing date has to be determined. Self-led water aerobics will take place from 9 to 10 a.m. Monday through Friday. Open swim will take place from 1 to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday, and Saturday from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. and 1 to 5 p.m. Swimming lessons will take place from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. Monday through Friday. Registration must be completed through Marfa ISD. Swimmers under the age of 12 must be accompanied by an adult. Individuals under the age of 18 must have a waiver signed by a parent on file. Daily admission fees will be $4 for adults, $2 for children under 18, and $1 for seniors 65 years old and up. Summer passes are $75 for adults, $35 for children and seniors, and $100 for a family pass, up to 5 members. Pool rentals will be available on Sundays for a rental fee of $350. For more information, visit the City of Marfa website or call City Hall, 432-729-4315. Swimming in Marfa is also available at the Hotel St. George Pool, free for locals after 5 p.m., and at the Thunderbird Hotel from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. daily for a fee of $10 for adults and $5 for kids. Presidio. The Presidio Aquatic Center is open to all ages Thursday through Sunday from 4 p.m. to 9 p.m. Pool only, meaning no slide or diving board access, is open Monday through Wednesday from 4 p.m. to 9 p.m. Admission for children 12 and under is $2, and swimmers ages 13 and up pay $3. Admission and concessions are cash only. The entire facility can be rented out for special events. For more details, contact the City of Presidio at 432-229-3517. Photo by Maisie Crow. Dirks Anderson Elementary School Principal Cheryl Welch holds student Peyton Zimmerman on one of the last days of the 2022-2023 school year. The school, a part of Fort Davis ISD, was built in 1925, and its main hallway remains largely unchanged. The small district is one of several in the Big Bend region in desperate need of an infusion of state funding. Dereliction of duties. Tri-County schools react to legislative failure to fund public education. By Mary Cantrell, MKCANTRELL at BigBendSentinel.com. Tri-County. As the area's underfunded rural school districts face rising operating costs due to inflation, deteriorating facilities, teacher shortages, and more, the recently concluded 88th legislative session resulted in very little new funding for public education, despite the state's record-breaking $33 billion budget surplus. The outcome has left the leaders of Tri-County school districts feeling discarded by state leadership, who they say is failing to adequately support rural public schools. I feel like in many ways this legislative session has been a dereliction of duties specifically for public education, said Dr. Michelle Reinhardt, superintendent of Alpine ISD. For there to be no new significant funding for public education or for teacher pay raises is just staggering. Reinhardt said the timing of the session concluding and the legislature's primary education-related bill, HB 100, which would have addressed several school funding issues, including raising the basic allotment per student by $900, not passing, has left districts across the state scrambling to soon finalize their budgets without the anticipated boost of state aid. Districts are just expected to weather the costs at the expense of our public ed students and teachers, said Reinhardt. It's just a really difficult time when it didn't have to be. This isn't one of those legislative sessions where there was just no money. Now, districts across the state are facing the bleak reality that they may receive no more substantial state funding for the next 2 years and will have to stretch every dollar of their budgets. HB 1, the General Appropriations or Budget Bill, included a mandatory bump to a specific part of the school funding formula, which will give districts a small increase in funds. In Texas, school funding is sourced from local school district property taxes, state and federal funds, and is determined per district based upon a complex formula, which education leaders in the Big Bend region argue is harming local districts. The portion of state aid that makes up school budgets has been declining in the area over the years. Fort Davis ISD has seen a 93% decrease in state funding since 2011. Marfa ISD has seen a similar 91% decrease, according to numbers provided by the district. Alpine and Fort Davis ISD both anticipate adopting deficit budgets for the coming 2023-2024 school year. Marfa ISD's need to purchase a new school bus may also force them to pass an unbalanced budget, said Chief Financial Officer Rosella Rivera. Reinhardt and Fort Davis ISD Superintendent Graydon Hicks, who has foretold his district's financial ruin and is furious with the lack of legislative outcomes, both said that the political will to support public education seemed to be absent from lawmakers at the Capitol. I think everybody at the legislature, in one way or another, does not have public schools' best interests at heart, said Hicks. I think both sides, Democrat and Republican, in both chambers, Senate and House, they're all jockeying for a talking point for re-election. Dr. Doug Carr, a previous superintendent of Presidio ISD, who has worked as a school finance consultant closely following legislative sessions since 2007, said the lack of new funds for public schools sent a strong message to public education. We've never really seen this before, where we had such a surplus of any kind, and in this case, such a big surplus, and basically just walked away with nothing, end of story, said Carr. The legislature is just looking at public education, particularly the group of people in the House of Representatives, and basically saying, well, I don't like you, I don't love you, I never cared for you, and we're not going to give you any more money, he added. School vouchers, an initiative that would allow public education funds to be distributed to private schools, also referred to as school choice, dominated much of the politicking this session and was a priority for Governor Greg Abbott and Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick. Reinhart penned a column in the Alpine Avalanche this spring in which she called for state lawmakers to focus their efforts on public education funding rather than vouchers, which she argued would divert taxpayer funds to private or home schools without any accountability or transparency. A very specific allowance for school choice for certain students was included in HB 100, but the Senate advocated for broader application of the program in their education bill, and that disagreement, in part, led to HB 100 not passing. All along, the idea was to hold public education funding hostage in order to force through vouchers as an additional state entitlement, if you will, for a select few, said Reinhart. State Representative Eddie Morales, who represents the Tri-County region in the Texas House, took to social media to lament what he characterized as the Senate's hijack of HB 100. Regrettably, the Texas Senate seized the opportunity to hijack HB 100 to implement their proposed voucher scheme that would put taxpayer dollars in private schools that have little to no accountability, wrote Morales in a Facebook post. Due to the Senate's actions, HB 100 has died, along with any extra dollars for our schools, students, and teachers. I am incredibly disappointed in the Senate's willingness to hold our public schools hostage to push their unwanted agenda that would decimate our rural districts. Reinhart said she would have liked to see the recommendations from the Teacher Vacancy Task Force, TVT, established in March 2022 by Governor Abbott, to study teacher recruitment and retention across the state, which released findings this February, be supported by public funds. The TVT's findings highlighted the need to increase teacher salaries, provide incentives for hard-to-staff areas, expand training opportunities, and more, and recommended funds be allocated to districts at the level necessary for a successful implementation. As it stands, Tri-County schools are already at the lowest end of the salary funding scale, said Reinhart, and not easily able to afford to offer teacher raises without state assistance. Starting salaries for teachers in the area vary slightly. Fort Davis ISD pays the state minimum at $33,660, while Alpine and Marfa ISDs hover just above at $35,190 and $34,390, respectively. The state average starting teacher salary is $45,500, according to 2023 data from the National Education Association. Alpine ISD will still work to address recommendations from the TVT, said Reinhardt, but will be limited based on available funding. That's felt even more by our districts and by our teachers because we don't have the buffer of additional funding or higher salaries that many other districts already have, she said. Another area Reinhardt would have liked to see addressed by state lawmakers is how local appraisal districts' determination of property values can negatively impact school funding. Districts can only collect school taxes based on local appraisal districts' determined property values, but the state comptroller often disputes those figures and comes in at higher valuations. The Texas Education Agency is by law required to abide by the comptroller's higher values when determining levels of state aid, meaning funding is often reduced for districts, even as they are doomed to collect taxes based on the lower values. These nuances are often overlooked by state lawmakers, said Reinhardt. No one at the Capitol is going to be looking at, well, how is this all going to impact Alpine? But by not thinking through those implications and not taking action on some of these pieces of legislation, all of these different failures on their part culminate in significant underfunding for certain districts, and Alpine's one of them, said Reinhardt. Another issue that impacts Alpine ISD that was addressed in HB 100 but was not adopted into law was the extension of the Formula Transition Grant, a necessary corrective measure that has shielded some districts from unintended revenue loss as a result of previous legislation, but is set to expire this coming school year. Alpine ISD was among a small portion of schools in the state that were adversely affected by HB 3, an education bill passed in 2019, intended to increase school funding based on adjustments to the funding formula. For Alpine ISD, the bill led to a 3% loss in funding, according to Reinhardt, and without the renewal of the formula transition grant that negated the loss, they will be out more money at the start of the 2024-2025 school year. The state's failure to act right now has created a significant fiscal cliff for many school districts, particularly rural districts, and those financial challenges are going to show up about a year from now, said Reinhardt. Tri-County schools are also using up the very last of the ESSER monies, finite pandemic era relief funds received in 2020, this fiscal year. Both Marfa and Alpine will use the remainder of the funds, around $500,000 each, on vital operational costs for teacher and staff salaries. Reinhardt said the situation is a perfect storm, and Alpine ISD is anticipating their deficit will soon grow from $300,000 to $1 million. ESSER allowed state lawmakers to invest less, because the federal government was, in essence, filling the gap on many of the inflationary costs that school districts did incur over the last 4 years. When that money disappears a year from now, that's an additional $500,000 that will be cut from our budget, said Reinhardt. Tri-County administrators agree that the root of their ongoing budget issues lies in the state funding formula, which was not planned to be addressed this legislative session. Moving forward, Reinhardt said inadequacies that result from how the funding formula plays out in rural schools needs to be addressed by lawmakers, as opposed to more typical one-size-fits-all solutions. In Marfa, the school board's common criticism of state policies is over the recapture, or Robin Hood, law, which requires property-wealthy districts to send money to the state for it to be equitably distributed to districts across Texas. But the combination of Marfa's exorbitant property values and declining enrollment causes Marfa ISD to send back large chunks of their annual budget. According to CFO Rosella Rivera, the recapture payment for the 2022-2023 school year was recently finalized and amounted to $1.7 million out of the school's $4.8 million budget. Fort Davis ISD Superintendent Hicks, who has been in the role since 2014, has assessed the option of ordering a tax rate ratification election to bolster the district's budget, but with property valuations and taxes reaching record highs, the local appetite for more taxes doesn't exist, and the election, which could cost around $20,000, may not be worth the risk, he said. The district is left with few options for how to proceed with improving their funding, he said, due to limited local control. Fort Davis ISD will adopt a deficit budget this year and has been spending money from their fund balance, similar to a savings account, of which around $800,000 to $900,000 remains. Hicks has plans to retire at the end of the summer and would be eligible to work as a part-time superintendent. The board has yet to make any decisions regarding the position, and talks of consolidating or closing Fort Davis schools down entirely have been circulated. But details on how a potential consolidation would work remain fuzzy, said Hicks. And the closure of a district which has served the unincorporated community since 1889 wouldn't ultimately solve anything. The problem is not the local districts. The problem is not how we're managing the money. The problem is the funding drivers and the legislative actions keep reducing our allocation. That's the problem, said Hicks. It doesn't matter if you consolidate us. It's still going to be the problem. We want a public trial. Dick DeGuerin, part-time Marfan, to lead prosecution in Paxton impeachment trial. By Allegra Hobbs, ALLEGRA at BigBenSentinel.com. Austin. Legendary Texas defense attorney Dick DeGuerin was in Marfa, where he resides and practices law part-time, when he received a call from the chair of the House Committee on General Investigating asking him to lead the prosecution in the Senate impeachment trial of suspended Attorney General Ken Paxton. You know what Marfa's cell phone service is like, laughed DeGuerin. I'm just lucky that it went through. It was May 27th, the day the Texas House voted overwhelmingly to impeach Paxton on the grounds of a wide range of accusations of misconduct. Suspending the state's top cop and setting in motion an impending trial wherein the state Senate will decide whether to permanently remove him from office. The 20 articles of impeachment adopted by the House include allegations of bribery, abuse of office, and retaliation against whistleblowers. Paxton's office has claimed that the House's impeachment was based on totally false claims. The House soon tapped both DeGuerin and Rusty Hardin, top lawyers known for defending high-profile clients, to serve together as lead counsel. Shortly after receiving the initial call, DeGuerin was informed that Hardin would be his co-counsel, and the two got to work almost immediately. It is now their job to build a case strong enough to convince at least two-thirds of the Texas Senate that Paxton should be removed from office, given the allegations laid out in the articles of impeachment. Of the 31 state senators, 19 are Republicans, meaning if every Democrat in the chamber votes to remove Paxton, 9 Republicans will have to join them in order to impeach. We've got the evidence, said DeGuerin. The evidence for any fair jury would be compelling. As he saw it, the fickle variable that could potentially offset the strength of that evidence was partisan loyalty, a variable he noted the largely Republican House sidestepped when it voted 121-23 in favor of impeachment. He hoped the Senate would follow suit. What worries me about the Senate is that if they vote on a party line, Republican versus Democrat, then he will not be impeached, said DeGaron. But this is not about party lines, and it's not about politics. It's about integrity. And so I'm hopeful that the senators will put aside any kind of party or liberal-conservative disagreement and vote to oust a crook. Then there was the matter of potential conflicts of interest. Paxton's wife, Senator Angela Paxton of Collin County, is slated to be among the jurors to vote on her husband's fate. And though her conspicuous presence on the ostensibly impartial body has been the subject of much discussion, she has yet to state publicly whether she plans to recuse herself. We haven't made a decision yet on whether we'll make an objection to that, but she ought to do the right thing and stand down, said DeGaron. Much of the alleged misdeeds revolve around Paxton's relationship to real estate developer Nate Paul. The articles of impeachment claim Paxton misused his office to benefit Paul, just as Paul at times benefited from the actions of the Attorney General. One article claims that Paxton benefited from Paul's employment of a woman with whom the AG was having an affair, and that Paul received favorable legal assistance from or specialized access to the office of the Attorney General. Another would-be juror is also enmeshed with the case in a way DeGaron finds problematic. The articles of impeachment claim that Paxton concealed his actions benefiting Paul by soliciting the chair of a Senate committee to serve as a straw requester. Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick has declined to publicly take a stance on the allegations in the trial. As far as prospective recusals go, Patrick reportedly told a Dallas TV station that he will be presiding over that case and the senators. All 31 senators will have a vote. Patrick's office did not return a request for comment by press time. Though DeGaron and Hardin both began their legal careers with the Harris County District Attorney's Office, they have gone on to cultivate notoriety as defense attorneys. DeGaron successfully defended former U.S. Senator Kay Bailey Hutchison against misconduct charges. He also represented Robert Durst, the New York real estate mogul acquitted of murder in a 2003 trial, and Branch Davidian leader David Koresh. Hardin has a history of representing prominent clients, including star athletes, notably NFL quarterback Deshaun Watson and baseball player Wade Boggs. The draft into such a notable prosecutorial role in a historic trial represents a significant pivot for both attorneys. DeGaron and Hardin have both stated they believe in the importance of transparency throughout the proceedings. They intend to resist any efforts to sweep it under the rug, said DeGaron. I think that all of the evidence ought to be public, and all the people of the state ought to know, said DeGaron. If you want a little sub-headline, we want a public trial, he continued, and it's not about politics, it's about integrity.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Fort Stockton Pioneer for Thursday, June the 8th, 2023. Jantz Continues Sonic Family Legacy by Sean Yorks. The Sonic drive-thru restaurant has been a Fort Stockton staple since 1976 under the ownership of Travis Lewis. The location has been successful in its 40-plus years of operation. Caleb Jantz became manager of the Fort Stockton Sonic last March. Caleb has been around the Sonic brand all his life and has worked in a drive-in for several years, said Tom Clifton, supervising partner of Tom Lewis Investments. He brings a fast and friendly service commitment to our drive-in at Fort Stockton. A graduate of the University of Houston, where he studied hotel and restaurant management, Jantz started working for Sonic in Houston in 2019 as a crew leader manager. The owner of that location needed Jantz to manage the Sonic in Sonora, so he moved west and came to Fort Stockton this past March. He is the grandson of Fort Stockton location owner Travis Lewis. "The reason I'm here is just to continue the legacy," Jantz said. "I hope my brother comes and follows my steps too." Sonic believes there's always room for improvement, and Jantz was brought to Fort Stockton to help make those improvements. "They believe there's always room for improvement. I changed things around in Sonora, so they believe that I can do it here." Sonora is considered a profitable store under Jantz's leadership, and he hopes to continue to do that in Fort Stockton. "It starts with hiring new crew, cleaning the property, building a good atmosphere, and having good expectations for the recruits. The turnover rate is way better than Sonora. I get a better working crew and more eager when there's a lot more potential, there's a lot more traffic." Jantz said when he arrived there were 11 employees, which he has since increased to 26. "It's not the same labor as you've had, so you get what you get," Jantz said. "But we train them well, we keep them going, we keep them motivated. The key is eagerness." Among the improvements needed are the stalls. Jantz said when he started in March, 12 stalls weren't working, so those were replaced. "It was a good fix," he said, adding the restaurant will eventually be getting new, bigger screens. "It's going to almost look like a flat-screen TV. They're going to be huge. Hopefully that improves hearing the order taker or them hearing you." Jantz said that he's also replaced 2 headsets to improve communication. The new manager welcomes feedback, whether it's negative or positive. "If it's negative, we want to work on it. If it's positive, we appreciate it." Jantz added that Sonic wants to be more active in the community, sponsoring events. "There's a future in Sonic. My plan is to expand, hopefully. We've been a part of the landscape in Fort Stockton for 43 years, and Caleb and his crew will continue to provide quality service to our customers," Clifton said. County continues COVID pay and leave, by Sean Yorks. While the COVID-19 pandemic is behind us, for the most part, the Pecos County Commissioner's Court on May 22nd decided to keep its COVID and leave policy as is. They basically said COVID is not as hazardous as it was during the COVID era of the past couple of years, said County Judge Joe Schuster. "So I figured we have COVID pay. We need to discuss if we want to continue to carry it or not." The judge said the policy as it stands is to quarantine for 5 days. "We still have plenty of cases here," he added. "I know that we did that COVID pay for our employees for a reason." Schuster said that he didn't have a problem with leaving the policy in place. "I think over a long period of time, it's going to slowly diminish down to nothing, something like the flu or a common cold." The commissioners agreed to take no action and leave the policy as is. So if someone is out with COVID, it doesn't affect their regular sick time. "I think we ought to leave it alone," said Precinct 3 Commissioner Mickey Perry. "I don't think it hurts." The court approved a request from Precinct 3 Dina Kennedy to authorize a temporary part-time position to train a new employee after Andrea Garza's left on May 19th. Ken Barrera took over the position, and the court allowed Kennedy to pay her for her training. The court approved a request from Greasewood LLC to construct 5 permanent driveways on the north side of Oswego Road in Precinct 3. The court approved several agreements with Computer Transition Services for the county's computer network. It approved a master services agreement which covers all products or services provided to the county, and assurance of with cyber defense agreement which prepares the county computer system for services provided by CTSI, and a rescue data backup continuity disaster recovery service agreement. County seeks grant for IRA and park improvements. Precinct 3 Commissioner Mickey Jack Perry and his crew have been working to improve the Iran-Pecos River Park, investing time, labor, and nearly $70,000 in budgeted funds as of 2023. The ongoing work has caught the eye of the Texas Parks and Wildlife Department. The county's history of dedication to the park and the local citizens, combined with a strong emphasis within TPWD to expand recreational communities in West Texas, has set the stage for future collaborative work. After speaking with Commissioner Perry, Inland Fisheries Division biologists assisted in the creation of a habitat and angler access program grant draft for the Iran-Pecos River Park. On May 8th, the Commissioner's Court voted to apply for the grant. The goal of the grant is to provide private and public entities with the needed funds and ecological guidance to improve angler experience and water recreation through conservation work and education outreach. The IRAN grant includes line items slated for improvements to infrastructure, habitat, and water quality. If the application is successful, the suggested enhancements to the park improvements will be done in several phases over the next 2 years. In addition to TPWD, a new local nonprofit, the Friends of the Pecos River, has also promised to aid the county in its efforts through landowner outreach and youth education events. Friends of the Pecos River became very interested in our little park, and it's been excellent working with those people, Perry said. They've spent a lot of time at the river. The most important thing for the park now is new bathrooms. We have quite a few people visit the park, and there are no bathrooms. Objectives will include providing the materials and labor needed to run a water line to the park. As far as the grant's concerned, that's our match for this part of the grant. That comes out to about $10,000 in material and labor. We're going to be close to $100,000 for this park that we're going to receive from TPWD. Pecos County is applying for nearly $100,000 in total grant funds. This number includes money the county will be providing in match. The bathrooms will include solar lighting with motion sensors, and there will be an outdoor shower and spigot with potable water to rinse off. We're going to start planting trees. Perry added that about 15 trees will initially be planted. It's just kind of a kickoff to what they want to do in the next 2 to 3 years. Another major component to the grant is controlling the dense growth of chara, a filamentous algae that blooms in the spring through summer months and prevents visitors from utilizing the full extent of their water resource. It's a hand application, chemical granules. It doesn't harm the river. It doesn't harm the fish. You can actually go swimming 30 minutes after you do the application. If the aquatic habitat can be improved through algae control, the San Angelo District Fisheries Management Office is interested in exploring fish stocking options. What fish get stocked depends a lot on salinity, temperature, flow, and other water quality variables that we hope to improve with our work through the grant. We're trying to move it forward, Perry added. There are several things that we want to do going forward, like trails and dirt bike trails, things of that nature, trails along the river. This is the beginning. We're definitely serious about making something happen out there. I would also like to mention Dimas Rodriguez for his vision and construction of the park to date. He took a small idea I had for access to the river and created what you see today. He deserves recognition. So Ross University expands student mental health well-being resources. So Ross University will offer students expanded access to mental health and basic needs support through a new partnership with the Fort Worth-based Timely Care, the premier provider of virtual health and well-being resources in higher education. The agreement, adopted by SRSU and the other 6 schools in the Texas State University system, is to comprehensively address students' mental health and overall well-being at a time when 24/7 access to high-quality care has never been more important. According to the American Council on Education, student mental health is the top concern of college and university presidents. It's also the number one reason students leave college. A recent report by Gallup and the Lumina Foundation found that 69% of students in bachelor's degrees programs who considered dropping out cited emotional stress as their reason. Beginning June 14th, through timely care on their phone or other device, students, whether on campus, online, or traveling, will be able to select from a wide-ranging menu of virtual care options from more licensed counselors and providers in all 50 states. Soon, SRU students will have access to the following services at no cost and without the barrier of traditional insurance: on-demand mental health and emotional support, 9 scheduled mental health counseling sessions, health coaching, care navigation, basic needs assistance, peer support community, digital self-care content, additionally, 5 faculty and staff will have access to support that empowers them to guide students to timely care resources to help them achieve a sense of well-being, live healthier lifestyles, and improve their mental health. Timely Care allows SRSU to deliver a hybrid model of care in collaboration with on-campus resources. Benefits to students include convenient 24/7 care. Physical and mental health issues often present themselves outside regular business hours, and timely care makes seeking support or treatment as easy and convenient as making a video or phone call. Nationally, about 40% of mental health care visits through timely care occur after regular business hours or on weekends. Reduced wait times. Many campus counseling centers often have a 2 to 3 week wait time for appointments, whereas students can typically connect with a timely care provider in less than 5 minutes. Diverse provider network. Timely Care's diverse and culturally responsive provider network reflects and is proud to serve students who embody diversity in race, ethnicity, gender identity and expression, age, religion, and worldview, language, health ability, sexual orientation, socioeconomic and immigration status, and more. More than half of mental health providers identify as BIPOC. The platform also offers professionals who identify as LGBTQ, speak multiple languages, and translation services to support more than 240 languages. Student scheduling services can choose to meet with a specific provider or select the first available. Peace of mind. Timely Care is a safe, secure, URAC accredited, and HIPAA compliant platform that follows campus-specific protocols to facilitate care coordination and follow-up to ensure continuity of care. Integrations with leading learning and management systems ensure students have even more on-ramps to the in-moment support whenever they need it. We've been making positive strides in creating awareness, providing outreach education, and facilitating services to individuals and groups across the university. The systems partnership enables us to add resources to better assist our students 24/7. With our recent recognition as a gold-certified campus for effort to create a culture of wellness, this adds more traction. Our Whole Pack Wellness Initiative designates mental health as an important piece of the model. This will not only help our students here and now, but assist them with strategies and education to create healthy mind spaces for their future successes. Timely Care is trusted to serve more than 1.5 million students at more than 250 colleges and universities across the country as an extension of campus health and counseling center resources with a goal of improving student well-being, engagement, and retention. 3/4 of college students who accessed virtual mental health and well-being interventions through Timely Care reported mental health improvement, including 100% of students who presented as a potential suicide risk. 60% of all students who have sought mental health support through timely care said they would have done nothing if the service were not available.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Monahans News for Thursday, June 1st. City Seal Coat Project on hold. City of Monahan City Manager Rex Thee told the news Wednesday morning the city is temporarily putting the annual seal coating project on hold. Quote, the city has postponed the street seal coat project set for early June due to the unexpected loss in the last 3 months of key personnel to retirement and oil field jobs who were trained on the equipment, he said. In April, the city fog sealed the roads scheduled for paving. Quote, we will continue fog sealing streets that need it and will schedule seal coating in a few months when new personnel have been trained, he added. The city has kept a schedule in which most streets get seal coated approximately every 7 years, and this delay will not create any real issue. Auditor retires after 26 years. The story was written by Jan Cranfield. Ellen Fryer was born August 12, 1958 in Pecos to Bill and Joy Youngblood. She graduated from Pecos High School in 1976. Fryer married in 1977 and moved to Germany with her husband, who was in the Army. Fryer experienced living in Germany two different times, once when the wall divided Berlin, and then again after the wall had been torn down. She also spent time in California at Fort Ord. Fryer worked at the Army Air Force Exchange Service, the PX, when her husband was stationed at Fort Benning, Georgia. A divorce saw Fryer and her two sons leaving Georgia and returning to Texas to live in Pecos. Ellen went to work at the Best Western Motel as a night auditor, which lasted about 6 weeks, until she went to work at the Reeves County Courthouse in August of 1988 as an assistant auditor, working under Marguerite Davidson for 2 years, and then the next 7 under Lynn Owens. Quote, my oldest son, Kenneth, graduated from Pecos High School, but we moved to Monahans in 1997. That's when I took the auditor's position at the Ward County Courthouse, so Chris graduated from Monahans High School, Fryer said. Replacing co-auditor Barbara Walsh on October 1, 1997, led to a 26-year career as Ward County Auditor, a career that has allowed Fryer to be part of many county changes over the years. The courthouse, which was built in 1940, did not meet the electrical needs of 1997 when Fryer was appointed to the position of Ward County Auditor. Quote, the wiring was probably close to state-of-the-art for 1940, but by 1997, with the coming of computers, printers, and other electrically operated business machines, the wiring would not carry the load. My office machines kept tripping the circuit breakers, Fryer said. Fryer's office equipment tripping circuit breakers was one of the reasons the courthouse was rewired. Throughout her career as county auditor, Fryer has seen and been directly involved in many major courthouse renovation projects, such as the complete renovation of the district courtroom, the installation of the elevator to the third floor, and the jury room being relocated to the third floor. Quote, there have been so many improvements, new structures built, and existing structures undergoing extensive remodeling during my time as county auditor, Fryer said. As county auditor, Fryer oversaw distribution of all the funds for all these projects, including the Ward County Event Center and the Event Center Park. She also has allocated funds for repairing and remodeling the county community centers, renovation of the Ward County Hospital Emergency Room after the fire, renovation of the Coliseum, and the new Ward County Arena. quote, "I have had the immense pleasure of working with the court and other officials in Ward County to contribute, advise, and be able to input knowledge of laws pertaining to county government operation," Fryer said. Quote, "The value of Ellen Fryer's service to Ward County is immeasurable. She has always been at the top of her game in terms of knowing the law and helping the rest of us avoid problems. Elected officials come up with ideas they think will benefit the community, and then Ellen helps us navigate the laws to ensure that we do things in the proper ways. In addition to her audit function, Ellen's been a contributor to the ideas and projects that have been developed over the years. From museums to community centers and everything in between, she's put her heart and soul into the betterment of this community. We're going to miss Ellen as our auditor. Her legacy is imprinted on the history of Ward County, and I consider her my friend. We wish her all the best in retirement," Ward County Judge Greg Holly said. Along with being full-time Ward County auditor, Fryer also spent the years of 2018 to 2022 as Loving County, New Mexico auditor, as well as Reeves County auditor during the same period of time. She retired from those two positions in 2022, working one more year exclusively for Ward County. Fryer will train Carly Ennis, former county treasurer, to take her place in the auditor's office. Ennis will become the Ward County Auditor when Fryer officially retires on October 1st. Ellen Fryer has been an active contributor to the museum complex at the Million Barrel Museum. She has been closely involved with the renovations of several local museums, including the Rattlesnake Bomber Base Museum. The Pyote Air Force Station was also known as the Rattlesnake Bomber Base. It was the largest bombardment training base in the United States during World War II. The bombing crews were trained in how to fly the heavy-duty B-17 bombers, known as the Flying Fortress, and the B-29 Super Fortress. Quote, "I helped get the new Rattlesnake Bomber Base Museum building set up with the artifacts that tell the story of that period in our local history," she said. "I have been involved with renovations and setup of the Coca-Cola Museum, the Texas and Pacific Railroad Museum, the Telephone Building, the Hallman House, and the Heritage House," Fryer said. She helped acquire the vintage oil field and farm equipment on display at the complex, as well as the 1950s fire truck originally used at the Pyote Air Station base before it was given to the city of Pyote when the base closed in 1963. Fryer was also involved in the complete renovation of the Ward County Library and joining it to the Ward County Archives, making it much easier for research to be done more efficiently. Quote, "I restore historical markers around the area, repaint and refinish so the writing can be read again. I have been contacted to restore many markers. I can make them readable again, but if the metal has been damaged, that's not repairable," Fryer said. In 2012, Fryer served on the Ward County Historical Commission and has been a volunteer at the Ward County Archives. Fryer was the Monahans Chamber of Commerce Merit Award winner in 2014 for her work on the Bomber Base Museum, and she also serves as a chamber ambassador. On a personal level, Fryer is an accomplished quilter and enjoys exploring family genealogy. Her sons do not live in Monahans now. Chris works for the Travis County Sheriff's Office, and Kenneth works for the Austin Post Office. Fryer will be moving to Austin after her retirement, where she already has a house. She will become a full-time grandmother. Quote, "I am a grandmother and a surrogate grandmother, and I will be picking up two of my grandkids after school next year. I will see the two that live in Austin every day during school," Fryer said. I want to say thank you to my staff over the years. I have had some of the most dedicated people working with me in the auditor's office. I say with me, not for me, as we are a team working together to better our county. We also have wonderful elected officials and department heads who all interact with the auditor's office. Without this team spirit throughout the county, I would not have been able to assist the court and help with the accomplishments Ward County has experienced over the past 26 years, Fryer said. Felon booked on gun and drug charges. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. An Odessa man, who is a convicted felon, has been arrested on multiple gun and a possession charge after a traffic stop last Monday. Matthew Pritchard, age 32, was charged with possession of controlled substance, a state jail felony, unlawful carrying of a weapon, a Class A misdemeanor, and felon in possession of a firearm, a third-degree felony. Officers conducted a traffic stop in the 2400 block of East Sealy for a speeding violation on a white Hyundai on May 22nd. According to Monahans Police Department Captain Stormy Laws, quote, the driver was going 73 in a 65-mile-per-hour zone and was stopped. Officers made contact and asked Pritchard to step out, and in doing so, the officer noticed ammunition in the vehicle. Officers said Pritchard was acting nervous and as if he was reaching for something. Quote, dispatch ran a check on Pritchard, which came back positive for felony convictions. Therefore, Pritchard was detained, and officers conducted a search where a small white crystallized rock-like substance, suspected to be methamphetamine, was located in Pritchard's pocket, as well as a firearm under the seat along with the ammo, he said. Pritchard was subsequently arrested and taken to Ward County Jail. Bond was set at $7,500 for the possession charge, $10,000 for the felon in possession of firearm, and $5,000 on the unlawful carrying of a weapon. Traffic stop nets meth one arrest. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. A Monahans woman is facing felony drug charges after Monahans police officers located suspected methamphetamine in the car she was a passenger in early last Friday morning. Monahans Police Department Captain Stormy Laws said the drugs were found during a routine traffic stop in the 100 block of East A Street. Quote, the officer conducted a traffic stop for failing to signal and while making contact with the passenger, Jenna Ray Ramirez, age 37, of 1403 South Allen Street, the officer observed open alcohol containers. End quote. Officers conducted a probable cause search where a clear plastic baggie containing a clear crystallized substance suspected to be methamphetamine was located next to the passenger seat within the reach of Ramirez. The suspected methamphetamine weighed 1.05 grams. Ramirez was subsequently arrested and taken to Ward County Jail and charged with possession of controlled substance, penalty group 2, more than 1 gram, less than 4 grams, a third-degree felony. The driver of the vehicle, Emilio Flores, age 66, was released on scene. Ramirez's bond was set at $10,000. She remains in custody in lieu of posting the bond.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of Far West Texas. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.